Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
If you're trying to save money, how do you find the best interest rates? Well, it's not easy in this dismal market, but part of the answer depends on the amount you have to invest, the amount of time you can invest it, and the risks you can tolerate. We're going to talk about all these things today. My guest is Joan Goldwasser. She's a senior reporter for Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine. Joan, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is a fascinating article because even though it's kind of positive in a way, it's not, because the rates, the returns are dismal all over the place. But some are less dismal than others. Now, tell us, and what you all have done here, which I like, is you've pointed out the safe investments, the medium risky, and then the high risk with higher rewards, which is, I guess, to be expected. But even those high rewards are not very high. But let's talk about it, although they are high compared to what's going on in the general investments today. Tell me the methodology that you use in putting this together, because you reference an awful lot of stuff. You must have done a lot of work.
Well, we try to be as thorough as possible. Obviously, first, we did what everyone else should do, too. We went online to look at rates, and you can look at rates at bankrate.com or mybanktracker.com, and that will give you a sense of what the various banks are paying for, you know, money market accounts, savings accounts, certificates of deposit, which are all, you know, risk-free investments, and you can see, you know, what the universe actually is.
Yeah, what you actually could gather if your risk tolerance is low. Okay, so now do those websites tell you things about what the requirements are for you to participate in this particular investment? I mean, I know some of them have time requirements, some of them have amount requirements, lots of other different things. How did you find out all this? Is this usually available on the internet?
Oh, it's definitely available on the internet. If the particular website doesn't have it, it will give you the name of the bank, and you can put the name of the bank in and then click on that and find out, you know, everything you need to know. If it's a CD, you know, what the minimum investment is, mm-hmm. what the time frame is, you know, what the early withdrawal penalty is, all of those important
and those
bits of information.
Bankrate.com.
Right, and My Bank Tracker.
MyBankTracker.com.
Yes.
Okay, so those are two sources where you can find information on what's going on out there in the world. Okay, let's start out by talking about some of the about the economic outlook for investment rates, returns. It doesn't look good, does it?
No. I mean, the Federal Reserve seems to be saying pretty consistently that rates are going to remain low. And we see this with Treasury rates, which are even, you know, much lower than CDs, but you see it reflected then in bank deposit rates and certificate of deposit rates,
which are minuscule.
Yes,
I mean the returns are minuscule. It's astonishing how small they are.
I mean, the highest rate you're going to get from something like that is probably just under 2% right now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And that's high.
It's not very high, right? And that's for, you know, a 5-year CD.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of those low risk, lower yield investment opportunities for consumers. So you start out, well, I guess before we go into that, there's some certain things that consumers really need to sit down and analyze. And that is what they hope to gain, which is, of course, a lot of money, but be realistic. I guess the other thing would be what, how much money you have to invest, how long you can tie it up, and whether or not you can risk it.
Right. Those are the important things. And how much money you have to invest is obviously important. But these days, if you're talking about bank type investments, you can find a lot of accounts with very low minimums. And the difference in yield is pretty slight.
Now, oftentimes, do you find that in accounts that are paying you, you have to keep a certain balance?
Well, that's for checking accounts that, you know, to get, there are lots of free checking accounts still available. But in general, they won't pay you much interest. If you want something that has a little bit higher interest or some other, you know, perks that come with it, you will need to put a lot of money into the bank usually.
But what I find that consumers have to do is to make certain they read all the fine print. Because we heard from one woman who had opened an account, and she ended up paying a rather huge penalty because she actually let the account go below, but she swore she didn't know. Well, I think she probably didn't read all of her documents, but she swore she didn't know that there was a minimum balance that she had to maintain. And she had paid to have this account to begin with. She'd paid a fee to get this account, and she felt like she was really being put upon by the bank. But yet, when it got right down to it, there was fine print that said, you know, you even though you've paid a fee to join this, whatever it was, you still are going to have to maintain a certain balance.
Yeah. Reading the fine print is essential. I mean, we've talked about it for years, particularly with credit card agreements, but it's certainly true with, you know, your account agreement with your bank and any other kind of financial document. You need to know. For CDs, for example, there's a huge disparity if you find that you do need the money and you're withdrawing it early. There is a great disparity between the penalties that a particular bank might charge versus another bank. And, you know, if you're uncertain, you might be willing to take a slightly lower yield so that you have the option of withdrawing early with a lower penalty.
So I guess the real thing you've got to do is, as we said, that analysis is critical to begin with.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving on from there, then let's look at money accounts, which pay almost nothing.
All right, so there are money market deposit accounts and savings accounts, which are almost interchangeable these days. The one difference is that technically with a money market deposit account, which is a bank account, we're not talking about money market mutual funds, which are mutual funds and used to pay rather good interest rates, but now are paying, you know, 0.03%. So you might as well ignore them unless that's money that you're going to be investing and it's easier for you to have it there because, you know, it's more accessible and it's very accessible. But money market deposit accounts let you make 6 withdrawals a month, which doesn't actually count. ATM withdrawals don't count. But in general, it's 6 withdrawals a month and they often offer check writing privileges. And thereof, you can get about 1% with a money market deposit account or a savings account.
Well, one of the things that you point out, many of these ways that you're saving your money are covered by FDIC. And you also have to decide how important that is to you and how much money you're putting into a particular account. And do you find that consumers may be better off spreading their money between banks, between different investment instruments?
Well, you could be, although, you know, the FDIC insurance was raised to $250,000 per account. And if you if you want to have all your money in one account, and if it works for your family, I could have an account with $250,000 in it. My husband could have an account with the same amount of money in it, and we could have a joint account.
It would all be covered.
And each of those accounts would be covered for $250,000. And if we have minor children, you could have trust accounts for them, and those would be covered as well. And
right.
You could have a retirement account. So you can actually have quite a lot of money
in one bank.
In one particular bank. And then the other option, if you're doing certificates of deposit and you have a lot of money, is a program called CDARS.
Let's come back to that. We need
to
take a break here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joan Goldwasser. She's a senior reporter for Kipling Personal Finance Magazine. And she and Lisa Gerstner have done an article on how to score the best interest rates on your savings. That's a rather positive title, but as Joan pointed out to me before we went on the air, it's not as positive as it might sound because you're not going to make a lot of money. But you can make more money if you do some things that you all are recommending. Now, let's move on. You were talking about the CDARS. Just define what this is.
Okay. CDARS is a company, an organization that has made agreements with various banks so that you can one of its participating banks, you can deposit up to $50 million.
That
bank, you know, I mean,
should be so lucky.
Right. If we all had that much money, we'd be less concerned. But the bank this participating bank then parcels it out to a number of other banks in $250,000 parcels, all of which then receives FDIC insurance, and you receive one consolidated statement from the bank that you have made the original agreement with.
Okay, so that's something else that consumers can do. All right, looking at CDs, they're not much better off than money market accounts, right?
Not really. A one-year CD is paying about 1.15% interest. A five-year CD, the highest paying, was what we're talking about here, is 1.95%. So there's not a lot of disparity.
Right. CDs, so the incentive to invest your money for longer term is not that great.
No, it isn't. The only reason you might want to do it is if you want, you know, to create a ladder and have a certain amount coming due each year, perhaps money that you want to live on, you know, rather than having to withdraw it from the stock market, you know, if the market is down.
So you could have CDs that have varying...
Yeah, you could have sequential maturity so that each one comes due. And you can find... Also, you don't necessarily, particularly with rates that are this low and bunched together, if you look, one of the banks that is in, might not be number one, but it'll be perhaps in the top 10, might be in the top 10 in all categories. So you're sacrificing a few hundredths of a percentage point, but you've got the convenience of dealing with only one bank.
Right. And then you've staggered the money so that if you need it, you don't pay a penalty.
Right.
Although penalties can vary as to what you pay. So that's one of the other things you've got to ask. If you need to get the money out of there, what kind of a penalty are you actually going to end up paying?
Right. For short term CDs, the penalty is often 3 months. But when you're talking about something like
3 months, you're giving up three months
worth
of interest that you've already earned.
Yes.
Okay.
But for a 5 year CD, it depends. Like Ally Bank is particularly consumer friendly. It charges you only 60 days worth of interest, whereas other banks might charge you as much as, you know, half of the interest you've earned, or, you know, a year's worth of interest. I mean, a substantial amount, when particularly if you're only earning, you know, 1 or 2%.
Well, let's talk about, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with some of the things that we've been talking about, but I don't know how familiar they're going to be with some of the other things that you have put forth. I certainly didn't know until I read the article. You do talk about savings bonds that may pay a little bit more. Are they a risk?
No, savings bonds are not a risk at all. They are, you know, put out by the U.S. government, and you are definitely going to get your money back. As of January 1st, you can only buy them online. So if people are used to going into the bank and buying a savings bond either for themselves or as a gift, you can't do that anymore.
All right. Now, you talk about e-bonds and i-bonds. I don't know what the differences are. The i-bonds pay more.
Well, right now they pay bond. Double E bonds are basically your traditional savings bond that everybody, you know, had from, you know, time. It seems like
time began.
Right. Practically. I bonds have two components. And one of the components is a fixed rate. And the other component is an interest rate based on the rate of inflation. And that changes every 6 months. So the important thing, if you plan to keep a savings bond for a long time, is the fixed rate, because that's what is going to be there for the 20
that's
years.
That's the stability.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, I-bonds, the current interest rate is 3.06%, but the long-term portion of that is 0%.
Whoa.
So that's not so great.
Right. It looks great in print until you understand the intricacies of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you buy the bond, you'll get the 3.06% for 6 months. And if inflation stays where it is, you might get that percent for the next 6 months. But there's no guarantee. Mm-hmm. If for some reason inflation drops, you know, it could go down to 1% or 0.5%. It doesn't. And the guaranteed portion of that interest rate is zero.
Yeah. So.
But if we have negative inflation, if prices actually drop, you will never lose money. They do guarantee that.
So
whatever,
you always have your principal.
Yes, you will always have your principal.
So depends on how much of a gamble you want to take. But you're not gambling your basic
not gambling your basic principal. And so if you give it as a gift to someone, I mean, they will get back what you have given them. It's just
If it's a long term that you're looking at, then the E bond, the double E bonds are the best bet.
Well,
probably.
For right now, at least.
Right now. Yeah.
You know, the Treasury
Department. We have to talk about everything right now, don't we? Because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right. I mean, the Treasury Department, every 6 months, when it announces new rates for the I-bound, announces what the fixed rate will be. And it can change. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the years, it has certainly been much more generous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You know, it really boggles my mind that the options for consumers and how much knowledge you have to be successful in figuring out where to put your money. You got to do a lot of work.
Well, you should at least pay attention.
That's true. I like that, pay attention. Exactly. But you really need to go behind the scenes and figure out exactly what you're getting when you're starting to put your money into something, especially if it's long term. Now, I know this is not part of what you were talking about, but do you find that people are going more towards savings in the banks now because of the versatility of, or the volatility, I should say, of the stock market?
I think that people are nervous. Many people, I think, took money out of the stock market and put it in money market funds because that was an easy place to park it. Mm-hmm. And I think in many cases, it's been sitting there.
Right.
And whether that probably wasn't such a great thing to do, but if you're nervous, you
That's
know,
right. You've got to assess the amount that you can risk. What your assets are. And probably part of that can be you can divide your funds into different areas where you've got some that you've got to have as the stability. And then you may want to take a risk with some of the other funds. Depends on how comfortable you are.
Right. And, you know, if you're younger, obviously, you can take more risk.
You can take more.
You can
sure.
put money in the stock market with a fair amount of assurance that in 20 or 30 years, you will have made more money mm-hmm. than you could make if you kept it in
yeah.
the bank.
In any of these instruments. Yes.
Yeah. Over the years, historically, the stock market has been a much better place to invest
right.
money.
Right. Okay. Let's just take a brief pause here to let people know they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joan Goldwasser. She is a senior editor for Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And we're talking about you can make a little money on some of your investments and some of your savings accounts. You can make a little more if you're willing to make a little more risk. So let's move on to the higher risk and let's put it this way, somewhat higher rewards. You talk about world currency CDs from EverBank, which can earn 3 or 4%. But now there are some risks involved in that. First off, tell us what this is. What is a world currency CD?
You are basically buying either a single currency or a basket of currencies from, you know, various parts of the world. They have it divided. You can do it by geographic area. You can do it on the type of commodities or something, you know, gold or various they have it divided in different ways. So basically, you are investing in another country's economy.
Well, now, there's been so much instability in so many economies around the world. Has interest in world currency CDs gone down, or is it just that you have to better know how to protect yourself?
Well, if you put your money, I mean, obviously, EverBank itself is an FDIC-insured institution. So
your base money would be safe?
Yeah.
If it went bankrupt.
Right. If it went bankrupt.
Your investment would not be safe.
No. So the main thing, EverBank sort of is conscious of this, and it offers different countries' currencies depending on its own analysis, presumably of the rates, the risk, and mm-hmm. you know, and the return.
And that's what you mean by buying a basket of something
right,
instead
of
investing in one country's
right,
currency.
You can buy three or four
right.
or a half a dozen, depending on that. And one of the risks, obviously, you're not going to lose money, but the one risk is that what you buy will change depending on that currency's relation to the dollar.
Mm-hmm. If the dollar goes up, then you're going to lose money.
Exactly. Because you will have bought fewer rands or pesos, or whatever currency mm-hmm. you've invested in.
Yeah. Is there, what else should people know if they're interested in investing in this kind of an instrument in the world currency?
Well, go to the EverBank website. They do a fairly good job of explaining, you know, what you're investing in. You can call them and get more information. And, you know, you might want to just do a little bit of research on the particular country that where you're putting your money mm-hmm. to get an idea of whether you
feel... Or countries.
You know,
they will tell you if they're going to do a basket of investments. Will they tell you what countries
are included in that basket? Oh, yes. They will definitely tell you what countries...
So you can choose between baskets, so
right.
to speak.
And you can choose between, you know, a particular commodity. If you think that the price of copper is going to go up or something to that effect, you can, you know...
So a country that has a lot of copper
right, might
be a... better. You got to be educated, man. Yes. I'm telling you, you really got to know a lot to do this. Okay, now you also mentioned something called ultra short-term bond funds, which are not FDIC protected. What are they?
All right. Those are funds that are offered by a number of, you know, companies that offer mutual funds, and they are investing in very short-term bonds. It's a you have no control over the particular bonds that they invest in, where, you know, what states they're from, or, you know, what kinds of bonds, but they do tell you that these will, you know, turn over very rapidly so that they're is much less risk. You don't have the worry that with interest rates presumably increasing that the, you know, the bonds will lose value.
Okay, but now you said that they during the downturn in 2008, there were significant losses in this short-term bond funds.
Right. I mean, any mutual fund is riskier than, you know, any bank investment. There's no question about it. The very short-term bond funds are less risky than long-term bond funds. But there is a risk, and you do not, you know, they're not insured. I mean, there is such a thing as CIPIC insurance. So if the mutual fund company were to go bankrupt, then the amount that you
have left or whatever,
right on that particular day would be insured.
All right. Now, what else? We only have a couple of minutes here. What else would you advise consumers to, not necessarily instruments of investment, but how do you advise them to go about doing all this? Okay, they're going to do research, and they got to sit down and do a lot of analysis of their financials, right?
Well, sure. First, you know, look at the amount of money that you have. How much money do you need to live on, particularly if you're retired or about to retire? See, you know, if you have a certain amount of money that you want to keep for the next year, you want it accessible, you want to be able to not have to pay a penalty, hopefully, to get to it. And you'd prefer, generally, not to have it invested in stocks so that if the market goes down when you need, you know, a check for your rent or some large expense, you don't have to sell when the, you know, that stock has declined in price.
Well, you also might think about, am I going to be purchasing a car in the near future?
So,
do I want to pay for that car? Do I want to put it on time? You know, on finance it. Those are also questions, I guess, that are.
And everybody should have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. And that should be in some account that is easily accessible.
That you can get to without paying a ton of money for the thing. Well, I guess what you really need to do is just to stay on top of what's happening in the markets. And it could be fun in a way.
We hope it's not too painful.
Well, your article is excellent. Now, this is available online at kiplinger.com.
Yes, and there's a lot of very useful information at kiplinger.com about the basics of investing and about specific investments.
The website's excellent. Right. You all do a very good job. And very interesting here, because I learned a lot by reading this. I don't consider myself particularly knowledgeable in terms of where to put my money. I have somebody. I go to him and I say, what should I do? You know, should I panic?
Never
that's exactly
a good solution.
Right. That's exactly right. And sometimes, as you said, you just have to look at the long term and think, I'm here. Let's not get crazy. And just because something drops, go sell it and take it out of a stock market investment. That might be a good thing. So you really do have to do a lot of. Maybe you have to have nerves of steel.
Well, it helps, obviously. Staying calm is always a good strategy.
That's a good strategy, a very good strategy. Well, thank you so much. It's been fascinating. You've been tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. My guest is Joan Goldwasser. She's a senior researcher, reporter for Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. You're listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And I am Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.